extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. It is Thursday. We had 12 games last night. We have so much to talk about, pushing it ahead to week 32 as well. It is chutes and ladders in the standings, but the real treat of the day is that Chuck D is back. And I don't know, can we call you Chuck D if you're wearing the blazer, Charlie?
Presidential.
Like, is it, that's more like Charles, right? Like, how do we approach this? Like,
sir, do we have to, is there a title? Does the Coin House come with,
right,
like, it, a royal decree?
Do we, it feels like we need, for those of you who are listening right now, Charlie is very, very snappily dressed. He's wearing a blazer. I sort of feel like, I don't know, Charlie, tell people how you feel to be back. Tell people where you are, you know, push the Coin House, the preeminent,
No, I mean, I'm super excited to be back. One, because the production meeting, we have a lot to cover, and I'm hyped. It's been too long. I've been away from you guys for far too long. Number two, I'm in Boston. Took a 6 a.m. flight from D.C. after the Revs beat D.C. United last night, and I had to jump into some meetings this morning. I also work in nonprofit, so just trying to help Boston be better and help people uplift the city. And so, that's what I like to do.
Right now, though,
shows.
He had to hit people up. He said, hey, we got to circle back offline. Let's take this, let's look at the Blazers on now to show some solidarity with you, Charlie.
I threw a tie on
I like that.
Just to see if I could get on Charlie's level. Charlie doesn't wear a tie because he's a cool guy, which I respect. But I needed to bring something because I don't got the shirt on. Oh, and I just messed it up. By the way, I respect a ton the work you're doing and obviously helping people and helping the city. But if you really want to help Boston, you probably should have kept Evan Fournier, but whatever. It's a different conversation for a different day. Knicks day, baby, we're back.
First Knicks reference of the season. I'm sure it will not be the last one. Look, it's good to have you back, Charlie. I just want to throw out a quick story here. Kalen said he had dinner with you the other day and you made him come upstairs to your penthouse in the sky provided by CBS just to flex on him.
Sounds very
funny. You know, that's not my style. I'm not.
Do I know that?
Yeah. And I was being the good friend. I'm not going to have him wait in the lobby when he can just come up and hang out, listen to some music while I get ready for dinner.
Okay. All right. Exactly. That's true. That's true. It's all about sharing. It's all about sharing in the wealth. Let's get to it here. And before we do, I just have some big news. Decision Day 2021. Guess who's going to be live doing a second screen watch-along show for the entirety of Decision Day? I'm talking about 5 hours. We'll have to find a way to take bathroom breaks, etc. But it's going to be me, Doyle, Kalen, Goss. You're going to be calling the game with the Revs, obviously, Charlie, so you'll be out of there. But we're going to be sitting in here doing a live show, watching these games with everybody for 5 hours. As the standings updates, you will see it with us. We will be reacting. As goals happen, we will be losing our minds, I'm sure. There is nothing better than watching games with other people. It's what I've missed the most in the last 2 years being here in Kansas City. We used to, on Sundays, all be in the studio, all be together. We would see something crazy happen. We'd be jumping up and down on top of the couches, looking at each other, tearing our hair out, just being like, did you actually just witness that with me? We get to do that for Decision Day. So tune in. All MLS channels. We'll have more details in the coming weeks on that. Coming up here, a Wednesday night of comebacks. Newcomer of the year sort of in the balance. The Wooden Spoon being fought over with a ferocity that we didn't think would be happening this time of year. And at MLSsoccer.com, I got my Wednesday takeaways. Charlie Bohm has a piece on the Revs' march toward history. They're getting closer. And Doyle has his annual, your season is over, fill in the blank club. What did this year mean? He just dropped Cincinnati, Dallas, and Chicago. So go check those out. And congratulations to the Baldy Eagles, who won the Extra Time Fantasy League. They had Emmanuel Reynoso captain. That was a good decision. And Christian Arango off the bench. Also well done on that one. Let's jump right in. Let's do it. Let's start with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Dave, this is a Brian White podcast. May it forever be. Down 2-0 at halftime. And Gio Savarese is on the halftime interview being like, look, we just got to find space. This could be more. The Portland Timbers broadcast team, you have Ross Smith. You got Ridgie in there now. Yeah, and he's like, well, them goals are coming, baby. They're going to roll in the second half. They're going to lay it on Vancouver.
So they do a great broadcast. Ross is great. I think Jake's one of the best in the league.
Yeah.
Liam Ridgewell's been a good addition. It does feel at moments like it's a fifth division game in England where it's just like Ridgewell and Ross just going back at each other in whatever accents they have. There is no mountain too high for Brian White to climb.
Exactly.
Know that. Live your life like that. We're talking about a generational American number nine. We're talking about a guy who comes on the field down 2-0 and changes the game, creates a goal without touching the ball. We are talking about the future. And we're talking about
Brian. You love your Red Bulls guys. You know?
Sorry, Charlie. First of all, Red Bulls too.
Yeah.
I don't I don't watch MLS, so I don't know. I only watch USL. Big win last night over Loudoun United. But we're talking about Brian White, Charlie, the leading American goal scorer in MLS, or is Pepe still that?
Pepe is, okay. Yeah.
The leading American goal scorer since June, July? Probably still Pepe.
Yeah. Look, he's got like 11 goals in about 1,600 minutes. I did the math on the GAM conversion because there's a $400,000 trade in June. Red Bull sending him to Vancouver. $500 was the performance incentives. I have to imagine that Brian White has hit those performance incentives.
Vancouver,
so the math on this,
New York, they're like, do you want more? Because
yeah, like we could actually, we could give this to you, good faith here. By my math, the Caps are currently paying between like $36,000 and $45,000, depending on the performance incentives, in GAM per goal. Mm. That is a decent trade, and that's not even extrapolated in the future. Lucas Cavallini started this game, his first start in basically a month for the Caps. This is the guy that for like 2 years we've been like, well, if Cavallini just gets healthy, if he just gets going, it's the missing piece. El Tanque. Well, it turns out the New Jersey Mario Gomez was the missing piece. Yeah. Shout out to Tom Bogert for that reference. He came on, you're right, he made the run. He took, you know, Dario Zuparic into no man's land. Zuparic is like, wait, where am I? Almost fell down trying to get back as Diver Caicedo scored that goal. Then he gets the header. Bruno Gaspar has no business keeping that ball in bounds, let alone putting it in a place that somebody could dunk it. And Brian White has no business putting that amount of power on it as he circles back around, and yet here they are. And then Jose Van Ranken, late on, probably should get the Shaq treatment from Gio Savarese. You know, like in the Shaq gets pulled off the floor when it gets close because they're just going to hack a Shaq him. Well, Jose Van Ranken probably should get pulled off in like the 75th minute now if the game's close, right?
This is the opposite scenario, though, because Van Ranken's the one who keeps fouling people.
That's true, but it's the same concept. Again, second game in a row, he costs them a point. He, for no reason whatsoever, just cleats Christian Dahomey's ankle in the box late on, and the Caps get a PK and win this thing. Dahomey's automatic. Afterwards, Vanni Sartini, I mean, he is like delirious. I don't know how many quotes I saw from Vancouver Whitecaps player. They're like, this is beautiful. It's just beautiful. And they had to win. They had to win because coming into this, LAFC had won. Minnesota had won. The Galaxy were going to win. Vancouver knew they had the pressure on them and won. This was the biggest win of the night. It was their first away Cascadia win since 2018. Jeremiah Oshan of Center of the Heart is doing the research, and I think he came to the conclusion that this is the first one in MLS that was a two-goal-down comeback to victory win. This is a playoff-saving, season-changing win in a couple months where the Whitecaps have had a ton of them.
There's a ton to talk about in this game, and Vancouver was dead in the water at halftime. It wasn't that they were losing. It wasn't that they'd given up bad goals. They weren't on the field. They weren't in possession. They weren't dangerous. They didn't look like they had the ability to stop Portland, and the entire conversation on the broadcast was, it can be three, it can be four, it should be. If Mora puts away his chances, shout out to Anders, big Felipe Mora fan, obviously. Sarita Patel, who's the Caps insider who was at the game, she tweeted this. She said, true story, head coach Vanni Sartini came out of the locker room, looked straight at me and said 3-2. That's going to be the final score. Write it down. 3-2. So that doesn't mean everything, right? Every coach has confidence. But what we talked about on Monday was, I don't know that I've ever seen a Vancouver team, and then okay, you go back to Pedro Morales times, so we're talking at least 5 years, that played with confidence, that felt like they could own the game, that they could take control, that they could step forward. And then you look at what happens when Brian White comes into this game. And obviously, we're joking a little bit, but legitimately, a run across the back line changed the game. And from then on out, it wasn't if Vancouver could. It looked like when Vancouver does. And now you're talking about a team that had the hardest schedule down the stretch to make the playoffs. And they've just beat SKC and Portland. One at home, one on the road. That's how you make the postseason. And that's why this is a team that, for whatever's going on, has a level of confidence and belief that I don't know that anyone else in the Western Conference outside of Seattle can match.
Vancouver, 6-2-2 under Sartini. Of course, Mark Dos Santos set him up for all of this. Yeah. We know that. But they're above the playoff line, Charlie, 43 points. Do you believe in the Whitecaps? Easy question. Tougher answer.
He got that right. I do. I think because they're playing as a team. And when you have that belief that you're going to get through it together, regardless of how much quality you do have, if you don't have those big star names, it doesn't matter. Come this time of the year, if you're all moving in the same direction and there's an identity and an understanding, that typically gets you into the postseason. And I think Vancouver right now, you talked about Cavallini just getting back, Brian White and his influence. You need players who can change the game for you. Not necessarily score goals, but change the game. And if you have two attacking players in Cavallini and Brian White who can do that for you, along with, you know, Ryan Gauld, and I think that they have enough to get it done. And Minnesota gets a big win. RSL, they play at Dallas. They play at Chicago. They got San Jose home, Portland home, and then they play at Sporting Kansas City. It's not the easiest schedule because Chicago are still playing for just pride, and they want to end the season on a good note, right?
And jobs.
Jobs. Dallas, same kind of thing. They're playing in Dallas is always difficult, no matter if they're at the top of the table or the bottom of the table. And then Portland, SKC, those are two teams that are looking to go into the playoffs hot. So, and they're good. I like Vancouver's chances of sneaking in.
Here's what's interesting to me, because that RSL run is basically none of the teams in the race. Maybe Portland now is in it. That's a debate we could have. And I think for RSL, that probably works. But for Vancouver, they've got San Jose, Minnesota, LAFC, and Seattle. And I think they're a team right now that wants that. They want six-pointers, right? Like, they're a group that they're not looking to back in. They're not trying to find results in other places. I think they want to face each of these teams head-to-head to be able to show that they're good enough, but also they have the confidence that they can beat them, and now you're starting to jump teams. On points per game, obviously RSL's still in the playoffs right now, but for Vancouver, as you mentioned it, Weeby, they step on the field against Portland and they pretty much know what's happened. Like, especially at halftime, you know everyone else has won. You know right now your playoff hopes are on the ropes. And you come out and play that way, and you play the way you did against KC, and there's just no way you're going to tell anyone on this team that they're not going to make the playoffs, that they're not good enough, that head-to-head they can't, you know, take these teams. And so I think Vancouver-Minnesota is going to be a wild game to watch, because it feels like it's two teams that have highs and lows, and where are they going to match? Is it going to be Reynoso and Fragapane and Lode at their peak and it's too much for Vancouver, or is it going to be Ryan Gauld pulling the strings and them taking over? That's going to be a ridiculous game next week.
Minnesota LAFC on Saturday, San Jose Vancouver on Saturday. Vancouver going on the road. We've kind of made it a little bit like the Brian White thing has got a little meme-y. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things that we just glom onto because we're so excited about it. And look, his performance deserves it. He probably, if we're giving out second assists for some of the balls that get second assists in this league, his run on the first goal deserves a second assist. Like, he made the space for Dyber Caicedo to just run directly into. He ran the corner. Caicedo ran the skinny post. Boom, right there. Easy one for them. But it's more than that, I think, for Sartini. It is Leonard Owosu, who is now the player that I think that they thought that they signed. They're going to have Caio Alexandre come back next year. Maybe Sartini will be the head coach then. I don't know. You have Christian Gutierrez come back in this match and start. And you have Nowinski playing on the other side. I mean, both those guys like starting to play the whole, we talked about the Andy Nahar role. They both have a little bit of that.
Yeah, I don't know that Gutierrez should be a guy that's starting on this team going forward, though. I think that was a big part of them going down 2-0.
His first game back.
For
Cut
sure.
Him a break.
And he's not a center back, and they're playing
The weird part.
Yeah.
That's the weird
part. And they're playing three in the back, and I like the idea of there are fullbacks who fit that role well. And you mentioned Andy Nahar. Like, I think that is, I really like teams that can get runs out of one of those center backs. We've seen Colorado be super successful with it for a ton of this year. Obviously, Nahar has been successful. We talked about Aaron Herrera with RSL doing that as well this weekend. I think Nowinski can be that guy. But with Youngworth, Ranko, and Godoy, that is a unit right now. And we talk about Brian White a lot, but Youngworth was a huge pickup for them as a trade at the transfer deadline.
But when you look at Minnesota's remaining schedule, that's a team that for me we could see drop down below the line. You know, I look at LAFC; they have to win out. They're at Minnesota, Seattle, Vancouver home, and at Colorado. That is one of the toughest schedules I've ever seen to finish the season.
Are we looking at the same thing? So I got home LAFC, I got away Vancouver, I got home Kansas City.
I'm saying for LAFC, their schedule, I don't see them getting into the playoffs. And then you look at Minnesota, what I'm saying is LAFC, if they ever have a chance, because they're hanging on to the thread, they could beat Minnesota, because Minnesota has not been convincing, to be honest, right? Can they have to then go to away at Vancouver. In Vancouver, the way they're playing, I like their chances when they're playing at home. Then they still have to play SKC. That's never an easy game, whether you're playing them in Kansas City or at home. And then away to the Galaxy. I could see them not picking up a ton of points in those games.
So
if they make it, Vancouver, should Vinny Sartini get this job?
I think he should anyway.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Okay. I will say this. I'm never against having a long-term plan. And if they know for some reason that Sartini's not the right guy, don't be a victim of the moment. But look what happened with Seattle and Brian Schmetzer. Right? Schmetzer comes in, takes over. There was belief in Seattle that the team was good enough. They needed a reset. And now look where they are 5 years later. Like, they are the standard bearer of culture, of club, all those things in this league. So you have to be able to weigh who, and this is something, I'll be honest, I don't know Vinny Sartini very well, because I literally had met him once and haven't really talked much about him and seen much about him, because there isn't much out there until this moment. But if you believe he can be a head coach, okay, fine. If you don't, I think it's okay to say, this was great. What do we bottle from what he did well in terms of looking for our next coach? And you still
have him around.
But why
would you look for the next coach? If he gets them into the playoffs, why would you look for a next coach? That's because if they had Mark Dos Santos, this team is in the basement. That's for sure. They gave up on him.
That's fair.
This team, he's got them playing to their very best. So in my opinion, with all the other coaching jobs out there, it's not like you're going to be able to bring the top cut guy, because you have all these other clubs that are going to be needing a coach. So if you have someone who's already got the heartbeat of the locker room and has got this team playing the way you want them to play, why would you look to make a change now? I'd say, all right, let's build off of this for next season.
I think it just depends what Axel Schuster wants, right?
Right.
What is his vision for what this will be going forward? Where are his connections? Where are his relationships?
It also depends on what you believe Vinny Sartini's done well. And if what you think he's done well is, well, there needs to be a change of culture and a change of mood. And Charlie, you know this, right? As a coach, everyone knows when a coach is under pressure. The yep. feeling in the team, as Mark Dos Santos is circling the drain, is pressure on everyone. So at a minimum, it's why you talk about the coach bump. When that coach leaves, there's a feeling of relief. Now Vinny Sartini is built on that. But is that overall something that you can build a club right. around? Or do you have a philosophy of how you want to play, a vision of the type of players that fit into it, and a leadership style where you can set culture and tone day in and day out for 1 to 5 years? And it's okay right. if that's not what Sartini does, and for you to assess that and say, He's still our director of coaching. He's still in this club, but we want a different guy who is there every day. I'm not saying that's the case. I'm just saying I won't jump off a cliff if they say there's a reason that we're not going to stick with him and we're going to give someone else the job going forward. But
Pa Muruka.
Listen, I didn't say it, Charlie.
There you go.
Yeah, Charlie said it. But look, there's a little bit of precedent here. Like, if you look at Atlanta United, for instance, Rob Valentino comes as an interim, changes the culture, changes the vibes, gets results, drags them back into it, but they still looked around and they said, Gonzalo Pineda's our guy.
That's Atlanta United. That's not Vancouver Whitecaps.
So, yeah, but Vancouver are not the, like, little engine that could that a lot of us make.
They're in the middle of the pack
as far as spending. They have ambition.
But Charlie's point, which is fair, is with so many openings, and let's be real, there are not a ton of coaches with MLS experience, they are probably going to have to look outside the league for a coach that they consider the quality that they want. Because they're not going to be, with everything available, what are we talking about? We're talking about Lucci Gonzalez, we're talking about Landon Donovan, we're talking about Pablo Mastroianni, we're talking about potentially Bob Pat Bradley. Noonan.
But again, we don't want to go through, I think the league's past the old cycle of like coaches who've done it, who've played a little, who've maybe managed two or three seasons, you know, haven't really done it. I feel like now Major League Soccer is moving in a direction of we're giving new opportunities to play to coaches who we feel could establish a culture, and or we're going to give fresh chances to new faces, or we're going to import coaches from Europe or South America who have a good CV and can come in and establish something.
In certain cases it has. I mean, Hernan Losada would be a case. It depends on the profile that you're going for. There have been a ton of failures.
He didn't have a vast amount of experience.
No, he didn't. And look, Charlotte FC just went out and did the same thing.
But Charlotte FC hasn't won a game yet, so let's not follow a model.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying that there is a precedent there. And maybe that's where the Vancouver Whitecaps want to go. But I'm with you in the sense of Vanni Sartini has shown clear value to your organization. What do you do now, and how do the results of the rest of the season partially dictate that? We'll see. It's going to be super interesting. But this was a huge win for Vancouver. They absolutely had to have this, and it's super painful for Portland.
How do you think Montreal is doing, Gus? How would you say they've done with
Nancy?
Thierry Henry leave? Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Would you? Yeah. I'm just saying, like,
but Wilfred Nancy was in that club for 5 years, right? He knows that.
Sartini's been there since 2019.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. And again, to my point, Montreal ID'd Wilfred Nancy as a guy who was capable of being a head coach and leading this group, and he fit very specifically with what they were building, which was he understood the academy, he understood how to help young players develop. I think it's been great, and I don't believe that you have to hire a coach in MLS who has previously been a head coach. But there's not a laundry list of guys who are potentially ready to be a head coach, and it's still a risk. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, if you have someone like Nancy, if Rico Clark is that guy, he's your first assistant. Obviously, he knows how to win in this league. If you're looking out around across the rest of this league, you saw Ezra Hendrickson be the head coach for Columbus yesterday with Caleb out. Like, there are guys out there for sure. But it doesn't
Shalry
feel
Joseph.
Shalry Joseph, what he's done for the Revs, 100%. There are guys out there, I believe. But if you're going to get a guy who has head coaching experience for Vancouver, it's probably going to be someone who hasn't coached in MLS. And I think it's dangerous because, say whatever you want about Losada, in general, the numbers show that it has not been successful over the last few years.
Patrick Vieira.
I mean, yeah, but you're not making the point, Charlie. He's saying the numbers. He's saying the data, the overall numbers. You're giving us
Gabriel Heinze. Show me GBS, although he played in this league, so I guess that's different.
Yeah.
Most of the coaches who have come from overseas have struggled with
this league. Anybody who pulled on the FC Cincinnati crest. But look, Sartini has a place in this club, and I think if you look at it and you read between the lines, Axel Schuster does value him massively. Like, before the 2020 season started, they had moved him, or I guess it was at the end of, sort of, and for 2021, they were supposed to bring in a new first-team assistant. He was the director of methodology for their academy. So if you're the Whitecaps and you're saying, well, we do want to be a team that pulls players up through the academy, but they're also right now scouting really well in South America, it seems like, recently. And, oh, by the way, they've done a really good job Colorado Rapids-esque in making trades within the league. Sartini has a huge value. The question is he your head coach? Is he a director of methodology? What is he in the upcoming years, and does he want to be a part of it? Right now, it seems like he is a great piece for them, and certainly they're absolutely flying. It's been really fun to watch.
Can we talk about Minnesota now? Because I think Charlie pulled us in there, but then we can.
Yeah, let's go Minnesota. Because we're talking comebacks. You know, Vancouver down 2, comeback. Minnesota with Portland at Allianz, down. They come back. Howler by Tyler Miller. They come back. 2 goals in 6 minutes, 63rd and what, like the 69th? This was a huge win for them, and Adrian Heath comes on afterwards and says what Adrian Heath would say, which is when we have our four best attacking players, we're going to be pretty dangerous. But this wasn't a perfect performance by any means.
No, and I think to Charlie's point where he was going through the schedule and talking about their potential to make the playoffs, it feels like they are the team in this group that is purely reliant on the talent and doesn't control the way games are played. So there's a great chance that they go in and beat KC. Because KC wants to control the ball. They're going to try and possess. And Fragapane and Reynoso and Load are lethal on the counter. And boom, there you go. But I can't tell you that that's what's going to happen. And I don't think anyone around Minnesota can either. The talent exists, but the ability to control games. And that's what you saw against Philly. Was they couldn't lock things down. They gave up a goal immediately after scoring. They don't control the pace of play, even at home. And they did a great job to close this game out with the red card to Metaner, which was an odd moment in itself.
Very odd.
In a playoff race like this, for him to lose his head. But Philly has the ball the last 30 minutes of this game. You're up 3-2 at home. Put your foot on the ball at some point. Knock it around. Take the air out of the game for Philly. Let the crowd get behind you. Start a lane. All these things. And it's not just Minnesota. I didn't see it from Atlanta. And I didn't see it from Columbus this Wednesday night either. I think those are two teams that are in trouble of potentially making the playoffs. But for Minnesota, it's been the story all year. Load comes in. Within 30 seconds, I think they score the goal. He doesn't really affect it. Glesnes slips, whatever. But from that moment on, they were dangerous. Yes, when all four of those guys are in, they are very good. They did a really good job of identifying those players. Fragapane looks like a legitimate game changer in this league. Reynoso is elite. Who knew is scoring goals? It's great. But are all of them going to be available for every game to close this out, plus a playoff game? And if they're not, is there an inability for this team to get a result?
This was kind of the recipe last year, no? Except it was Hot Boy and Reynoso, right? And as long as they were going to sort of fuel the run would continue. But if you didn't have an A or A-plus game from your two best attacking players, in that sense, they weren't going to keep going. Yeah. That's where they're at right now. But Emmanuel Reynoso, by the way, oh my God, this dude is
stud.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Charlie, I'm going to give you a choice. You saw the Adam Buxa one in person, the back heel assist. I'm sure you saw the highlight of the Reynoso back heel assist. Which is the better back heel assist?
Well, Reynoso's was double assist, second assist. Because it's two Fragapane who plays it through to Hunu, who scores the goal.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Adam Buxa.
Yeah, we knew Charlie was going to do that anyway. I gave him a little cover.
Yeah, I was going to say, a lot of like pensive thought there. Oh, man, what am I going to choose?
Yeah, it was really difficult. But Goss made the easy answer for me. It was a direct assist and not a second assist. So I'm going to go with the direct assist. But I love Emmanuel Reynoso and the way he plays. Like, just a cultured left foot. He reads the game so well. And similar to Carlos Hill in that fashion, they're small. They're small in stature. They're not super quick. They're not lightning. They don't have lightning pace. But what they do have is an incredible mind, and I think just technically and tactically, so far advanced than a lot of the players that they're playing against. And it's just amazing to watch them play and seeing their influence within the game.
Reynoso feels has like a little bit of a body to him as well. On top of all the things you said, he's pretty strong and big. And there's moments where guys step in on him and he just like casually pushes them off while he decides what he's going to do. And it last night was one of those games where it looked easy for a guy in a league where it's not really easy for most players.
Yeah, he's like flicking the ball over people, bring it around, a bunch of guys around him. Like, it just feels to me like he understands where the touch four touches from now is going to happen and how he's going to set you up while everybody else is sort of scrambling around him.
It's why they're so dangerous when Fragapani and Lode are out there, because you have to focus on those guys. And all of a sudden, the game opens up for him. And what we saw the first 2 months of the season was everyone was on top of him. And now, all of a sudden, backlines are 5 yards deeper. Midfields are 5 yards deeper because of those runs off the wings. And, I mean, he's taking shots from 35 out, because why not, when he wants to? But he just has so much time to figure out the game now. And it's impressive to watch. They are must-watch every game down this stretch because of the insanity potential factor. And Wonderwall if they win.
Yeah, the Wonderwall's, I mean, it's sick. It really is one of the best traditions in MLS post-win. 44 points for Minnesota after this dub on Wednesday night. They're in sixth place. Just to run it down for you in the West, Seattle drew 1-1 against Colorado. So it's still Seattle, Kissy, Colorado, Portland in those top four spots. The Portland is sort of, I mean, they're tipping here. They're at 46, and right below them, LA, who beat Houston, are at 45. Then Minnesota, 44. Vancouver, 43. Salt Lake didn't play, dropped below the line at 42. Then LAFC at 40. And San Jose, I think we all think, are basically dead at 36 below that, despite beating Austin FC. So from 4 to 9, 0.2 points per game differential. The only team that hasn't played 30 games is Real Salt Lake. Again, this is shoots and ladders. Like, you just shuffle the deck. Every single match day, you're going to see a bunch of teams moving, and every right. single action, every single result is going to have really, really big trickle-downs. So congratulations to Minnesota. Got it done. And thankfully for Reynoso, he had some good behavior, so his fifth yellow card didn't get him suspended, because they need him. He's got to be on the field for them the rest of the way. How about LAFC? Don't need Carlos Vela, apparently. But Chicho Arango is decent. 11 goals yeah. in just over 1,000 minutes. Hat trick against FC Dallas. FC Dallas made it 3-for-3 in Texas. All of them got E's next to their name, just sitting there in 11th, 12th, and 13th in the Western Conference. He's right. Is Arango the newcomer of the year? Like, it's not unprecedented that mid-year signings could be so. I mean, Pipa Higuain is a guy that jumps off to me in that way. I think Nico Ladero was newcomer of the year as well when he arrived. Mm-hmm. And in famous Bin Bear history, helped them make that run to glory. Somebody shook their head and said, "No, how can you be so sure?"
Because he's not even the mid-season signing of the year. Brian Gold.
I would say if
you think Brian Gold is?
If LA, no, he's not. It would be Shofis for sure.
No.
But if LAFC somehow got into the playoffs, I think Arango should get it. There's no question.
So then the same answer has to be for Gold if Vancouver makes it.
No.
We just held
Brian White as the savior for Vancouver.
No, because nothing happens in a vacuum.
Oh, stop it. Arango is doing this literally by himself. Like, they depended on Carlos Vela forever, and it was basically like, oh, Carlos Vela's out for the year. This ship is synced. It's sunk.
Diego Rossi's hey, man, I got to go to Turkey.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, see you guys later. Everyone left LAFC for dead. Arango has single-handedly given them hope. And for that reason, 11 starts, 11 goals, you got to give it to him. The guy is balling, and for me, if it's not Shofis, who's done it over the course of a season, and he's got 12 goals and 4 assists, and San Jose, they're hopeless too. I mean, it's been so up and down.
Oh, I was just trying to.
I know you guys have word choice. I know you guys have missed this.
Come on, we'll get out the executioner.
All right,
here, pull on the hood, Charlie. I'm
burying them right now, San Jose. Just so up and down, you never know what you're going to get from them. And that's why I just keep telling everybody, San Jose, yeah, they might look like Champions League winners one day, but the next they look like they're in the bottom of the second division. So for me, San Jose, I know Shofis has balled you look at 7 goals and 2 assists in those last 7 games, 12 goals on the year, 4 assists. He's looked at times unbelievable, right? Stellar. You have to play through him. And he is the only hope that San Jose has. But again, they're not great. So I would give it to Arango if LAFC get into the playoffs.
This is a ridiculous conversation that one of these guys joined a team midseason and is going to lead them to the playoffs. The other two aren't. And he's not going to get that. You're not going to put Ryan Gauld in that conversation. The other thing
I didn't say he's not in the conversation. I just said he's not the guy.
He's
not newcomer.
But the other thing that's unfair is the Arango's doing it himself, because The system in LA creates chances. The issue wasn't chance creation. The issue was just finishers. And so I understand the idea of Vela's not healthy. Kay's not there anymore. Rossi's not there anymore. Brian Rodriguez has been in and out. It's not true to say Christian Arango is picking up the ball 70 yards from goal and carrying this team. So I'm just saying Ryan Gauld is the reason Vancouver has turned things around. We talked about Vanni Sartini.
Is he the number 10 for Vancouver?
Yeah.
Yes.
Ryan Gauld?
Yeah.
He has one goal and two assists in his last 9 games. And you're telling me that this is the newcomer of the year, that he's the must. He is the reason with one goal and two assists in passing accuracy of 78%.
Bro, get come on numbers now. Out of my face. Don't bring numbers.
Come on now.
What's his QB rating? Yeah. Give me his QB rating. What's his plus minus?
Yeah.
80, I'm actually 80%. I'm with Charlie on this one. I think right now it would be a wrong go. It would be a wrong go.
Why are we on stats?
I'm sorry, Goss, you're my boy, but I'm sorry I had to rain on that parade.
I'm trying to get up here. So Nicolò Otero, 4 goals, 8 assists in 2016 when he came midway through the year. And I think Gault's 3 goals, 4 assists right
4
now.
Assists. Correct.
Yeah, 5 1 goal and 2 assists in the last 9.
Look, what we can all agree is that the rest of the season is going to determine this. There aren't a ton of sort of a signed in January or whatever it is and just completely excelled all season long candidates for this.
Can I throw some weird sleepers in there? Lucho Acosta probably should be in the conversation.
No, he is not a newcomer.
What league did
anybody on Cincinnati?
He's a former MVP candidate in this league. Newcomer means new. He's not new.
So he played in MLS last season.
He wasn't in the MLS last season.
He's old new.
He's still a newcomer to the
I don't think
now.
So. I haven't looked at the rules here.
But either way,
I don't think that counts.
I'm with Goss on that, but I'm not with Goss with him just being in the conversation because anyone in a Cincinnati jersey, you're going to take the L right now.
Luis Araujo is probably going to be in there as well. And I think in this conversation of like helping lead a team back, he's not going to win it over an Arango or a Gauld. But he's probably one of the guys that gets mentioned.
He had the potential, but Araujo is gotta be on the field and be a little bit more confident every match.
You don't love the finish from the left foot off the right foot to chip it over the goalkeeper. It's genius.
How many times did we see that?
Yeah, one time.
Yeah, one time. Not enough for newcomer of the year.
Well, let us know what you think. Who's your newcomer of the year? We're trying to figure that out. I don't think Lucho counts in this, but that's just me. Carlos Vela is, according to Instagram, we've said this like 15 times, training. Do we think we've seen the last of Vela?
I hope not. I really hope not.
What happens? I really hope not, too. It would just be if this is it for him in MLS and this is it for him in LAFC. We don't know that, but if it is, that would be a really anticlimactic finish to what was just, at times, the most blindingly brilliant player in the history of this league. But like, what happens if he does come back?
I think if he comes back, if I'm LAFC, I look at it and say, look at the production we're getting offensively with Arango. If Arango can give us minutes like a starter, it gives you that flexibility to sort of be able to work with Vela because you don't want to be reliant on him. You've proven over the last 2.5 years that if you go into a season, which is we need 25 starts from Carlos Vela, we're not going to win. But the way the team is set up right now, it feels like, and I don't know what happens with Atuesta, and we don't know when Segura comes back, so there's other parts to the team behind the attack. But it feels like you can get enough production out of the attack where you can manage Vela through the year, and peak Carlos Vela, or close to peak Carlos Vela, is still better than probably any player you can bring in to LAFC. That's how I would look at it if I was them. You've already convinced him. He's already sold on the project. He's already connected to the fan base. He's already in the city. With Arango at center forward, you can manage him and you don't need him to be the guy. Now you need to build the rest of the team behind him. But that's how I would look at it if I was LAFC.
See, and I was thinking more on like the next 4 games and the playoffs. Because you say, oh, he believes in the project and all this. Like, what is the project?
To win MLS Cup.
Yeah. Well, we knew what the project was before. But that's like the big macro side of it. What about the micro side? Atuesta gone, perhaps. Injuries there. Maybe Bob Bradley not around. We don't know any of those things. I'm thinking more in the next 4 games. Like, how do you get...
There's too many unanswered questions is what you're saying.
Yeah, for even think about next year.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about this year. Like, if their goal is to win MLS Cup, it's right in front. It's standing in front of them. Like, they got to make the playoffs and go for a run.
But if he's not healthy, he doesn't play. If he's healthy, he plays. What's the thought process?
I don't know.
Well, he won't be fit. I'll tell you that.
No, he won't. So I guess what I'm saying is
Arango's doing it himself. He's carrying the whole team. What does it matter?
Well, yeah, but they're still below the playoff line. Like, it's doing it himself and making the playoffs and making a run to MLS Cup are two different things. I'm just saying that Bob Bradley has a interesting sort of management situation coming up here. It's like, when is Carlos ready? Does Carlos want to play? And how do you sort of manage his role in the team and hope to get the most out of him to make a run? Because why not? Why couldn't they?
And that's the question that I think we all should be asking. Why do we have to ask if he wants to play? And that's, for me, the whole time since Carlos Vela's been a part of LAFC, it's like, oh, does he want to play? Is he interested? We don't hear that from Carlos. Like, I'm here 100% committed. I'm not leaving LA. Like, this is my home.
Wait, when have we ever
heard? He just asked it.
Us
but also Vela has like refused to come off the field before, like for this team. Like, it's not his fault that he gets hurt all the time.
When have we ever heard anything in this team, not in Vela's career at LAFC, that says that he has not been fully committed to playing when healthy?
I think he is, but
I'm saying long term, like, is this his place? Like, we're asking that question: does he want to play? We know he wants to play. For how long is he bought into the whole project? You talked about Brian Rodriguez, Diego Rossi, Atuesta. This was not forever. This was always, we're going to develop and sell them. But a player like Carlos Vela, he's not going anywhere. There is no developing and selling. This is going to be his home, and you want to be competing for championships. So you're getting back to the, am I always part of like a building process? Am I always part of, you know, like a restart, you know, because you develop players and then you sell them. Mark Anthony K, Latif Blessing, Atuesta. That first year, that was an incredible partnership. And then some injuries, you sell Mark Anthony, or you trade Mark Anthony K. Latif Blessing wasn't the same for a little bit. Atuesta was injured. You get them kind of back, but the team's not the same. Then Bron Rodriguez goes on loan. He comes back. He's some days looks like, you know, Champions League winner, and then some days it's like he's not interested. Then you sell Rossi, and he was balling. He's gone. I'm just saying, like you both are, what is the direction LFC are going? And I'm sure Thorington has already put in a phone call to Carlos Vela and saying, what do you want to make sure that you're here long term?
I just wanted to be on record that I think this is one of the most ridiculous conversations we've ever had on this show, but
I love it. Yeah. Go ahead.
It's not about whether he wants to play. We know that if he's healthy, he has shown that he's committed. It's about the sort of balancing act between the long-term future of Carlos Vela and his relationship with LAFC and the immediacy of perhaps rushing himself back.
What is that balancing act? If he's healthy, he plays. If he's not healthy, he doesn't play.
Yeah, I'm just saying we don't know if he's healthy.
Like, okay, that was the conversation.
That was the question I was trying to ask. Is he going to be healthy? And if he's not 100%, how do you manage if you're Bob Bradley? Because you still have an opportunity.
EKGs up on Carlos Vela. Let me get that EKG up. Is that what you're used, Charlie? Let me get my MRI scans up on Carlos Vela.
By the way, Bob Bradley, when they were down 1-0, went rage sub times 2 in the 26th minute of this game, which we haven't talked about yet. He literally was like, I'm just pulling you guys. Like, you're off. And it changed the game. So, hey, LAFC is still alive. Those are three comebacks. Here's another comeback for you. NYCFC came back on Atlanta. Atlanta up 1-0. Couldn't hold on to it. 90th minute. Gudmundur Thorarinsson, free kick, 1-1. Huge two dropped points for Atlanta. They're still above the playoff line, but those are points they should not be dropping, and desperation times for NYCFC, who are falling like a rock.
Absolute rock.
I think I said it when I was talking about Minnesota, though, but at no point in this second half did Atlanta put their foot on the ball. They never controlled the game. They tried to counter a couple times when NYCFC threw numbers forward, and you knew they would, and you know NYCFC wants to have the ball. You know you'll have gaps there, but it's just, again, it doesn't feel like a team. And we've talked about this with Gonzalo Pineda all week about match management, game management. That's been their focus, is seeing out wins, seeing out leads. And in this game, it's not just like, oh, we can't hold on. It's like they made no attempt to change the way the game was played. And I look at the final goal. It's a silly free kick to give up. But you look back 30 seconds, and Brad Guzan just launches the ball to no one up the field. In the 89th minute, you're Atlanta United. You've got Franco in the back. You've got Sosa in midfield. You have some of the best players in possession in the league, and you can't knock it around for 30 seconds to see out a game, to change the pace, to take the air out of NYCFC. So they blast it long. Second ball comes back in. It's a silly foul and then a great free kick for sure. But that's what I look at with Atlanta United, which is they are hanging on down the stretch. Flip side
yeah,
to Vancouver,
they're,
where
they're
attacking.
They're good. Okay. When you look at their schedule, remaining schedule,
yeah,
very fortunate. They're in a very fortunate position.
So that's home against Miami.
They play Texas
that's
East.
Fortunate. Home against Toronto. Yeah, Texas of the East is coming to Atlanta. Then they're away against the Red Bulls. And then they're away against Cincinnati. That's true. They got like three of the four. That's incredible. Yeah. Now the question I have for them is, can they do anything but counterattack, basically?
No.
Because I'm not sure that they can. They don't seem very clean when it comes to chance creation in any other sort of phase of the game. And that goes to what you were saying, Dave, about being able to put your foot on the ball, like let alone create goal scoring chances, just being able to control the game in those situations.
It
doesn't seem like they're there.
If you're capable of it. And if you have Moreno, if you have Sosa, if you have Barco when he's in, obviously not this game. I mentioned if you have guys like that, you should be able to. I'm not putting it on Gonzalo Pineda, right? Because he hasn't had time. But I think the fear is he doesn't feel like he can open the team up to do that. And so it's all just once we take a lead, let's hang on with our fingernails. And you reach a situation where there's four games left and you make one mistake and that could be it. Right? Because this whole thing's going to come down to one point on both conferences.
Yep.
And I was talking to someone with Columbus this morning and they said we lost to Chicago in the midst of a 6-game losing streak. That's probably going to be the game that comes back and haunts them. For Atlanta, it's going to be one of these. We were up 1-0 or 2-1 in Montreal, right? They did this 3 weeks ago here as well, and they're not able to hold on.
Yeah, it was a tough one for them. We mentioned the Red Bulls in there. Red Bulls still below the line. They needed NYCFC to lose. That would have been better for them. They needed Montreal to probably lose. That would have been better for them as well. But they are still right there controlling their own destiny. So it gets just as the Western Conference. I took you through it. It's a little bit wild out there. In the East, it's basically exactly the same. From, I would argue, Philly and Orlando, who are sort of battling with Atlanta, maybe Montreal for home playoff spots if Atlanta and Montreal get hot. You never know. All the way down to even Columbus at 38 points.
Oh,
from
Columbus
30
is
games.
Still alive. Columbus is still alive. And it's going to be hard. It's same with New York Red Bulls. They have an uphill battle. New York, these are all six-pointers. At the Crew, at D.C., home to Montreal, home to Atlanta, away to Nashville. If this is a playoff team and Gerhard Struber saying, hey, we can win MLS Cup next year, yeah, great. You know, if I'm Chicago and Cincinnati, I'd be saying the same thing, sure. But if you are a team and you're going to a team made of character and you have a backbone and you have belief coming into this last stretch, if you can get into the playoffs, you really do have something to build off of. And these games are massive. The Crew, they have to win out. For me, they got New York Red Bulls, Orlando, DC, and Chicago. They have to win out. And if they're playing at their best, which we've seen them do last year to win MLS Cup, they can get in.
Yeah,
they
but then they're not. If we got to rely on them playing at their best, they're not getting in, Chuck. They're not. They should have won this game against Nashville, and they didn't. Couldn't hold on.
Facts.
They have the 1-0 lead against the Revs, right?
Do you think Red Bulls can get in?
I have more faith in the Red Bulls than I do in the Crew.
I think the Hani Mukhtar goal last night sealed it for me with Columbus, which was you get so many opportunities to give up points. And I think that was one too many. And the emotional experience of you aren't the better team. Zelarayan rises from the ocean with this moment of brilliance, like Poseidon with the spear to the far post. And it's a trident. Gift. Poseidon.
Yeah, it's a trident.
What'd I say?
Spear.
Well, that part doesn't matter. Who cares? And then you get this gift of like, oh my God, we just got to see out a 1-0 lead in Nashville. And all of a sudden we are in the playoffs, right? They would have been on 40 points, one spot out, whatever. And to go from that to 3 minutes later, Josh Williams' face and just the nature of Zeller Ayan just screaming. Like, I don't know emotionally, Charlie, if this team can get over that. And so points-wise, they control their own destiny. They still have an opportunity. Yeah, Zeller Ayan, Nagbe, there's so much talent in this team, whatever. But it just feels like you come off the Campeones Cup, boom, you're back. Then you have a bad result. Okay, fine. Well, we have more chances. And it this felt like the last straw to me from the outside.
How about other ones around here? Because we had some other draws that were not last straws, but were tough results for some. I mean, I would throw in Orlando, Montreal. It's a good result for Montreal. It's a tough result for Orlando.
I would say DC had the worst result.
Yeah.
Considering they ran play against the Revs at home. They were at home against this New England Revolution team. And I think to start the game with some of the changes that Hernan Losada made, I thought this is kind of, he's looking at this as kind of a throwaway game because they play two home and two away to finish the season. And the match against New York City FC in his mind is much bigger than this New England Revolution game. And so I thought, oh, all right, maybe if they're stoked with a draw. But they controlled the play for 60-plus minutes. And I thought, oh, they better get a result. They should get 3 points out of this game the way they're playing. But then all of a sudden, Carlos Hill said, not today. And instead of coming away with not three, not one, zero, I think that really hurt them now coming up against almost – it is a must-win game against New York City FC.
Can we talk Revs now? Should we do it?
Let's do it.
The history chase continues.
Drop it on them.
69 points. Nice. 2 points is a magic number for the Shield. They're going to get it. They got 3 games left. The magic number to make history is 4. They got Inter-Miami at home, I want to say, on the last day of the season. So that feels like 3 in the bank. I would bet on them to get this thing done. Yeah, they've lost one game.
It feels like an Ima Boateng breakout game.
Oh, beautiful stuff. Tommy Mack, Daima, Ed Kizza, maybe. Like, you know, just get it rolling there.
No,
one loss.
They'll play their strongest team because they'll have a long break.
Yeah, true.
Until that first playoff game. So I think Bruce Arena is going to push these guys knowing that they're going to have at least 2 weeks off, 2.5.
It's going to be a long time. By the way, we had talked about Bruce Arena's thoughts on the Shield, and maybe we jumped the gun on that one because Elizabeth Pajota says this morning in media availability with Bruce that he says now that the Revs are getting close to winning the Shield, and it certainly has become a goal, and that it would be a statement for the club in winning their first in club history.
Once again, we're all in agreement all the time.
We broke him down.
We always agree with Bruce. No. Bruce,
welcome to the club, Bruce. Thank you, Shield Truther Bruce. You are welcome to, in our little brotherhood and sisterhood here. What do you think the Shield would mean for this organization, Charlie? I mean, they have it, basically, so we're just talking about the inevitable here. But what does it mean?
Excellence throughout a season. Consistency. What Bruce Arena's brought to the Revolution, which they hadn't had before, was the culture to compete and win trophies, silverware. It's not just competing and being good and people recognizing you as a club that's always going to be in the upper echelon, but now it's a club that, whoa, they're winning trophies. That's what the Revolution organization has been missing, is silverware, to say, hey, look, yeah, we got the Superliga trophy, but now we have MLS Cups. Now we have Supporter Shields. And Supporter Shield, to me, is a team that does it from minute one of the regular season to the last game and doing it and being consistent and a club that everyone's looking forward to or trying to emulate, right? That they've done something that is very difficult to do throughout the course of a season, dealing with transfers and injuries and, you know, the ups and downs of a season. What they've done this year is simply magical. And if and when they do break the regular season record, I don't see that being broken for a long time. I know we said that again.
We've said that every 2 years now.
But,
yeah, Toronto did. Like, nobody will do that ever again.
Then, yeah, but,
then the Red Bulls did it. We're like, well, maybe not. And
the way they've done it, too, you know, with a lot of one-goal wins, right? It's it's not blowing you out of the water 4-0, 5-0. And we go back to that season with Carlos Vela. It was like, this team is so dominant in the attacking phase of the game and transitions. But this Revolution side just know when they just do what they have to do to win. They know exactly when to do it. You can be better than them for 89 minutes, 80 plus minutes. And all of a sudden, everything clicks for them. And they break you down and bam, bam, bam. And next thing you know, you're losing the game. They have that quality. And you talk about the investment in three DPs, Carlos Hill, Adam Buxa, and Gustavo Bo. I mean, that's how you spend money. Guys who are going to change the game at any moment and who show up. Those three DPs have done it. Now, Tajon Buchanan is another guy who's... Might as well, you could throw him as a DP. The way he plays, quality. My God.
Turner, same thing. Turner, same thing. Exactly. But Bruce always says, like, in this league, you have to get your DP signings right. And if you go back and look at those Galaxy teams, that's how they did it. You have a Robbie Keane, you have a Landon, and you know, depending on the time frame, you have a Beckham or whoever else it was in those years. But Gustavo Bo, 15 goals. He's tied for he's third alone in the Golden Boot. Adam Buxa, 14, fourth. Tied for fourth in the Golden Boot. Bo has 8 assists. Buxa has 3 assists. He had the back heel we talked about. Of course, Carlos Hill, who gets a goal in this one, is the assist leader and the chance creation leader. All those guys on point. But that is like the Bruce Arena equation, right? Special players do special things. Put them in a position to do that. And then surround them with guys that understand their roles and get it done. And then, of course, in this league, you got to have a couple. Tajon, Turner, etc. You might even throw Andrew Farrell into some polster. Andrew Farrell into that.
Brandon Bond, guys are at a Jones.
Yeah, they're at a good. It's like the whole dang team. Good cap number and overperform.
Yeah, no,
and are game changers at times.
And locker room,
yeah,
locker room is vital. Having a good locker room, and Bruce, when he was going out to build this team, said, "I need locker room guys. A good locker room is key to success." And he built it. Literally from the ground up. I mean, I love that about Bruce Arena. He said, I got to target the guys who are going to add value to my team, both on the field and off the field.
And you look at AJ De La Garza, you look at Ima Boateng, right? They were part of his Galaxy teams. He brings them in.
McNamara.
For that. Absolutely. Now,
Teal.
We mentioned DeJuan Jones. We mentioned Brandon Bae. If all 11 players in the best 11 came from Seattle and New England, I wouldn't be even upset about that. Those teams, in my mind, have been so much better than everyone else in this league. It's not a knock on anyone else, and other players are going to get in there, and they should get in there. I'll probably vote for other players. But, like, that is how good both these teams have been, and the Revs in particular, top to bottom over the course of this year. Carlos Hill's been injured. It's not even like, if you're going to do it, right? We talked about Toronto that year. We talked about LAFC. That year, Vela was healthy. Normally, you talk about it. You got lucky. It all came together. Buxa wasn't hitting at the beginning of the year. Carlos Hill's gotten injured over the course of the year. Matt Turner went to Gold Cup. Then his form's been up and down as he's been in and out and going to national teams and all that stuff. It hasn't been perfect and straightforward, and yet they've won. And that's where you look at the culture, and that's where you look at the locker room. And the fact that, again, those two best teams in the league, you've got a Tommy McNamara who can come in, and it's set up so that he can succeed. Like Nicola Benezet is able to, like Kellen Rowe is able to out in Seattle. And then you look at what the Revs have been able to do with all these guys when they come into the team. They get wins in games where none of the DPs play or only one of them plays. And that's where this Revs team has gone above and beyond this year. And I think they're a playoff team, right? Like everything Charlie said. Sorry, Charlie. Last, everything Charlie said of like, you could be better for 89 minutes and the Revs will beat you. That's how you win MLS Cup. So we're talking about a team that not should, because that's always a ridiculous thing to say, but realistically has a shot at a double.
My question to both of you is, say the Revs set the record. They get their 4 points with the last three games. How many players on this team make the best 11? Which players make
the best? Turner will. Turner will. Heel will.
Does Gustavo Bo?
I'm not numbers. Sure, yes, but
we're talking about forwards.
That.
You assume,
Rui Diaz. I think Rui Diaz will be there. I think Daniel Shalhoub would be there over Gustavo Bo, probably.
I think DeJuan Jones should be in the conversation at left back. That would, and I probably will end up voting for him. So that's three in my mind. I don't know if either of the center backs, or it should really be Farrell. I don't know that Farrell gets in. Yeah. Polster will probably get votes. But
don't you think a record-setting team should have like four at the minimum in a best 11 season?
I think some of this is a vote splitting too between Bukes and Bo, right? Like you have a situation where it isn't just that one guy where you can just sort of focus all your energy and thought and voting power on that guy. Yeah, it's an interesting question. Let us know what you think. Revs fans, MLS fans out there. How many Revs would you put on the best 11? Yeah, Seattle fans as well. Who has to be on that list? It's always a fun conversation. By the way, we're talking about Bruce being on our side now, and he's on the radio right now doing some Bruce stuff. Let me just get you the quote here. He's talking about how they're going to have that long break because of the international window. Quote, we've got to find some kind of practice game behind closed doors before the playoffs because we're probably going to have 23 days off before we play again, .. We foolishly earned a bye. Bruce, never, just never change.
Bruce,
man.
101.
Never,
also,
ever change.
All Chicago Fire fans, or Chicago Fire players just extended their lease because they're going to be the ones who are going to have to play that friendly. I think they've done it two of the last 3 years when they've been out of the playoffs because the players still have to come in and train. Your contract doesn't end until after the season.
So they just fly them to New England for
Hey, come on over, guys.
I'm pretty sure NYCFC 2 years ago when they lost in the first round or second round to Toronto. Yeah. They flew to Chicago because they wanted the travel date and the schedule.
Guys, this is the closest to the playoffs you're ever going to get.
Why'd you have to do that?
Wait, what are you wearing, Ricky? I can't see your hat. What are you wearing?
Fire. So I couldn't resist. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Kyle Sheldon's going to say, return that hat.
They got the E next to their name. Like I like the hat. I like the logo. Next year's a fresh start. Like next year, maybe they can be the team calling in somebody else to play the practice game. TBD on that one.
I got some beef with Sheldon because where's my Chicago Fire hat?
Where's my scarf?
Where's my gear?
I'll send you some of my leftovers.
Wow. He's going to throw recycling at the Quinn house.
Exactly. Sunday, Revs in Orlando, FS1 Fox Deportes, a big game when it comes to Shield. Certainly, it could be clinched. It would also be clinched if Seattle doesn't win. If Seattle draws or loses, they would clinch the Shield as well as the chase for history. And Seattle Sporting Kansas City, by the way, Seattle and Colorado drew 1-1. It's Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, Univision, TuneIn, and Twitter.
And that's a huge game for you because I think your newcomer of the year is Alexandre Pato, who should play in that game.
Exactly. He's back. He's back. You think you're trolling me, but he's back.
It's nothing but the Revs, baby. He's front of the line.
He could change the course of MLS history. And if that's not newcomer of the year, I don't know what is.
There it is, Charlie. You heard it here first.
In this
we heard
wrinkle in time, in this wrinkle in time, maybe that could happen.
How many minutes is Pato playing?
I don't know, like
seven,
ten. I just want to see him. I just want to see him on the field. Can I ask you this question as we just think about Seattle and Sporting Kansas City on Saturday again? Univision Tudian live on Twitter for free, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Rui Diaz is back in Peru. I think it's hamstring he's doing. Polito had surgery. They say he's making good progress. Who would be in more trouble if their guy can't get back and get on form in time for the playoffs?
Seattle.
No. Really?
Yep.
No chance.
Seattle. They need Rui Diaz. I'm talking to win MLS Cup.
Understood.
They have no shot without Rui Diaz. No shot.
So I get your point. They're both hugely influential. Obviously, that's the correct answer. I will say, I think Seattle is a better team without Rui Diaz than SKC is without Pulido. That's my answer.
They haven't had Pulido for large portions of his entire time. Whereas Seattle relied on Rui Diaz.
And now they don't.
Without Ladero.
And now they're winning. They're still getting results without him. Are they though?
They've dropped off considerably.
I will take Freddie Montero. I will take Will Bruin. Exactly. I will take the potential of Jordan Morris coming back. I will take the winger depth they have. I will take the goals out of midfield that the Sounders get over what Sporting Kansas City would do without.
So here's
Daniel Shalhoub's had a massive season, but I think to just say, hey, Daniel, it's you and Johnny.
Here's the last month and a half for SKC. Draw against Portland. Draw against Minnesota. Draw against Colorado. Lose to LAFC. Beat Chicago. Beat Minnesota. lose to Seattle. Then they beat both Texas teams, which we know how we feel about that. And then they lost to Vancouver. This is not a team that has had great form without Pulido as well. So I think both teams struggle.
And what's Seattle's form?
Well, yeah. I can't get that up. That's not a thing that I have in
Get a little 404 error here.
Seattle crushed Colorado last week 3-0. They beat Vancouver 4-1, and then they lost to Houston, and then they
Also Colorado. Beat Colorado. Oh, yeah. They beat Colorado 3-0, and they beat Sporting Kansas City. Yeah.
Wait, they you just said they lost to who?
Yeah, they lost to Houston last week.
Oh, my Lord.
It happened.
Do they have an E next to their name?
If they got an E next to their name, you gotta watch out. Let's real quick, speaking of E's, let's hit the wooden spoon before we hit the mailbag real quick.
Can I just...
You got an ad? Time. Go for it.
I had two things. One, because we skipped over them. Nani didn't start, and I thought Orlando was very good to start against Montreal. It felt like an Orlando game of like chaos, energy, DK.
Yeah,
energy.
But how do you then like, you know, weigh that out with the second half when it's 1-1 and they need a goal to win at home and they got nothing?
Agreed. And they weren't even aggressive going forward for a lot of that time. So I think good and bad for Orlando. Colorado, interestingly enough, changed everything to play against Seattle. They got killed, as we said last week, in Seattle. They went with a 4-3-3, Kalyn Acosta at left back, Andre Shinashiki in central midfield. Nomly was supposed to start as a false nine. He gets hurt in warmups, so Baji gets the start.
Oh, my God.
In the first 25 minutes, Seattle looked lost, and it looked like Colorado and Robin Fraser had the perfect idea. They end up tying 1-1 from a winning position at home again. Think about, and we've talked about it, if Colorado had gotten half the points they've had, either from winning positions or at home, that they should have won, they're probably in first place in the Western Conference.
Yep. Yeah.
So
no, really.
I applaud Robin Fraser for trying new things here at the end of the season. They're kind of locked in where they are, probably around the 2-3 seed, so there's not as much to play for, and I think it'll help them going into the playoffs. And I think a lot of teams will watch what they did against Seattle and see if you can use it. They sort of defended in five in the back with Shinashiki covering Alex Roldan's space. But for the Rapids, it's been a story of dropping points that they shouldn't, and that's frustrating.
And the moment at left back for Kalyn Acosta just didn't work out. Leo Chu beat him, got the cross in, and rolled on.
I don't know how.
I don't know why. Say this. Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I don't know why people keep putting him there. But hey, look, Robin's trying to get those results, trying to find something. Rapids are going to be an interesting team to watch in the playoffs. We keep wondering if they have enough difference makers, and it's very typical that their DP anomaly once again drops out in this sense. Okay, let's talk wooden spoon. Turns out when you got nothing to play for, the games are fun, man. FC Cincinnati, Chicago Fire played a banger. FC Cincinnati trying to give their fans at TQL Stadium a second home win of the season. The crazy stat is Inter Miami actually have more wins at their stadium than FC Cincinnati do. Almost had it, man. Almost had a really dramatic draw. Yeah. Did you hear that? A little squeaker from me?
That's your wooden spoon voice?
That is my wooden spoon voice, apparently. It's in last place right now. Tyler Blackett gets a 90+1 equalizer. Big moment. Big moment for interim head coach Tyrone Marshall. And then 2 minutes later, Lukas Stojanovic just absolutely laser beams in the winner. And I think if you haven't seen it, go check it out. I had it in my column. Tyrone Marshall's reaction to that is just basically like a summation of the first 3 years of soccer in Cincinnati, of just like sort of like disbelief, but just the expectation of the inevitable and just sort of like a collapse of like, oh, God, again, not why us, but a wonderful game there. And then Austin got worked by San Jose, got worked over. And it got a little testy afterwards, reporter asking Josh Wolf if maybe his team quit. He was not happy with that question. And I can get why he wasn't happy with that question, to be honest with you.
I think the reporter was Eric Goodman, and he tweeted out the full video of the question and the answer.
Yeah.
Neither of them come off as harsh when you watch it as it sounded when the whole, like, oh, he called it a BS question. But yeah, continue.
I get why Josh Wolf would be a little perturbed by that, because you're basically questioning sort of the... You're questioning the commitment of those players and the coaching staff, and I think they would look around and say, we don't have any. We're just not getting the results right now. But Austin down at the bottom, since he looked like they have a great grip on the spoon, and that's probably how it's going to end for the third year in a row. Any thoughts you got, Cincy fans? Let us know. Chris Albright says they want to hire a coach by, what, the holidays? Ooh.
Ooh, how
so? That would be nice. He says that he wants to play. He wants to play a diamond.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
Well, Hanukkah, starts like November 27th. So if that's the one he's looking at, he's on the clock.
Well, he's got it. Yeah. Hey, come on. We got to get this thing done.
He's looking at.
Get Pat on the phone.
I think it's weird. Sometimes the way we talk about formations, as if it tells you everything. One, you're playing in that formation a third of the time of the game. But my understanding is the point was, I want us to look like Philly, right? I want us to press.
That's what I thought, too.
And that's, I think, the purpose. And it makes sense to be that specific before you hired a coach, before you put together a roster, before you know what it all looks like. Seems odd to me, but it probably won't matter. I mean, if they win one home game in the first month of next season, he'll be a hero.
End of the map. Here we go. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Make sure you check out the site for all the previews ahead of this weekend. Week 32 is right here. I mean, there is no rest for the weary, so get ready for that. What do we got in here, Dave?
Well, Matthew Cantu from Milwaukee wanted to step in and support us against the Bruce Arena anti-supporter shield movement.
But now Bruce reversed the narrative. Yeah.
Which is how you lead. That's how you're smart. But what Matthew says is New England are 9 points up with 5 matches left to play for Seattle. If MLS was one of the top 5 leagues in Europe that we talk about all the time, New England would be a solid bet to finish as league champs. That to me is the significance of the supporter shield. A postseason tournament should not diminish its significance. If anything, one could argue MLS Cup is diminished by the number of teams that qualify for the postseason, but I digress. Both achievements are celebration worthy. And we see that, right? Like when Man City wins the title with a lot of time left, they get like the guard of honor every game they go into from there on out and all that stuff. We don't always treat the supporter shield winner that way, and maybe we should start making teams line up and clap for their opponent.
Yes, we should. This is actually an amazing idea. We absolutely should do this. So let's see who might have to sign up. I have to clap. So Orlando won't have to clap. Orlando lucked out. They don't got to line up on this one.
Seattle loses before that game kicks off.
Oh, yeah.
Get on the line.
I want to see it. I want to see Oscar. I want to see Oscar and the crew out here, and Nani just out here clapping it up for the Revs. But if that doesn't happen, then it could be Colorado, which is a home game for the Revs. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have the same ring as, say, Inter Miami on the final day of the season. Phil, get your clapping hands out, baby.
Phil respects it, right? I mean, he's knighted.
That's true. That's true. He's got the ultimate respect for regular season dominance. That's, you know, mate, that's the only thing that matters, right?
Shame.
Do you think Nani?
Shame.
Do you think Nani takes credit for Tejan? He's like, if you hadn't locked me down in the playoffs last year, you wouldn't be where you are now. Do you think that's how that works?
I don't know if we want to remind Nani of that moment. Him, like, pulling himself off the ground, like, asking for calls. That was tough for him. All right, one last one. I think we got Martin from Sweden. Anytime we have a Swedish question, we got to get it in. Just for producing Anders, for his sake.
But obviously,
he's not Swedish. He's Norwegian, too.
No, we love sure Martin from Sweden. But Anders, do we want to do the email that I sent you in text? Or are we going to save that to surprise everyone later on? Anders will respond to me offline, and then I will tell everyone. This is radio. Now he's telling us how much time into the show. Now he's
come on, Anders.
Yeah, come on, Anders. Now I thought you were quicker than this.
All this talk about how we were going to make your chat live on the YouTube, and this is how you repay us?
I'm embarrassed.
He says, let's save it.
Fair. So Martin from Sweden basically was asking about Sartini. He says, question about interim coaches. How much can you credit the interim coach in a situation like the brilliant form of Brian White and the Whitecaps? Is there a case for Sartini to get the job on a more permanent basis? Which I think
we talked about.
Have you worked under an interim coach, Charlie?
No, I have not.
There you go.
Well, then, yeah, there you have it.
Yeah.
I was like, are we going to get some really good insight here?
I consider...
Oh, I have. Sorry, in France I did. Yeah. And it didn't work out for me.
It didn't work out for you, or it didn't work for the club or the coach?
It worked out for the team, though.
What was it like?
For that season, what he did was he stuck to what he knew. So he played his guys. So we took the academy coach, our director, who was in charge of, you know, developing a lot of the players who came up through the system. And then when the head coach got fired, they appointed him as the manager, and he took all those players that he developed and just played them and relied on them. And they kept us in Ligue 1 for that season. He was fired the subsequent season, but for that moment, the bump worked, and he got the team to stay in Ligue 1.
I just,
you know where the bump didn't work. There have been some, we talked about Rob Valentino, et cetera. You know where the bump did not work? FC Dallas.
No, not at all.
Luchi Gonzalez was 7 points out of the playoffs when he was let go. They're now 14 points out of the playoffs and obviously did not make it.
I just want it to be out there that I've always considered Weeby a bit of an interim at this show, and that's why I continue to try hard, because I'm waiting for the permanent manager to get the job.
Well, you know, luckily for you, I give you plenty of opportunities to step in, and yet I'm still here. So I think that says every single thing about my permanence. Exactly. You're the interim.
I'm Ezra Hendrickson in this situation.
That's the way it works. That's a pretty good role. Okay. Oh, wow. That hurts. All right, we're out of here. Big thanks to producer Anders. We will see you on Monday, everybody. MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app is your spot to get yourself prepared for the weekend, watch the highlights, or just stare at the standings as they chop and change throughout the weekend. Enjoy it, everybody. We'll be right back.